Hello, and welcome to Doc Talk. April is Rosacea Awareness Month. While the cause of this disorder is still unknown, what is known is that it's estimated to affect up to 16 million people in the United States alone. Additionally, a recent survey by the National Rosacea Society indicated that 47% of affected patients were unaware of the disorder prior to their diagnosis, and 95% stated that they knew very little about the signs and symptoms of this disorder. This Friday, HCP Live will be hosting a variety of discussions and new investigations regarding rosacea in an effort to raise awareness. But we want to give you a little teaser first. So for this episode of Doc Talk, Dr. Curran Law joins us once again to provide information on how doctors diagnose rosacea, what treatments are currently available, and the current trends and research regarding the condition. Rosacea is said to affect roughly 5.46% of the adult population globally. And the National Rosacea Society estimates the number of patients in the U.S. alone to be 16 million. So with that in mind, I was hoping you could speak to how rosacea is defined and what are some of the challenges that these patients face.
I actually think that we underestimate how much rosacea is there is prevalence-wise. I mean, if you look at the characteristics, I think in a given day, if I'm seeing adult patients, about 30 to 40% of people have signs of rosacea. Now, rosacea is a form of acne. It's an acneiform disorder. So the way we differentiate rosacea from acne is in acne, you have blackheads and whiteheads, also called comedones. In rosacea, you can have pimples just like you have in acne, but you don't typically have blackheads or whiteheads. That is in the inflammatory phase or the inflammatory part of rosacea. Rosacea has a number of different categories. There is erythematotelangiectatic rosacea, which is where people get redness and flushing on their cheeks, their forehead, and their chin. That's a very common type of rosacea, especially in middle-aged and older adults. It's not as common as it is in kids. There's also the papulopustular form of rosacea, where you get pimples and pus bumps, but you don't get blackheads, also in the forehead, nose, cheeks, and chin. There's also a form of rosacea called the phimatous form of rosacea, where you get a lot of deep-seated swelling in the nose, the chin, in the ears. And this is swelling of the sebaceous glands or the sebum-producing glands. And so there's a lot of different criteria for rosacea, but the big ones are getting recurrent flushing in the central face with certain triggers like spicy foods, alcohol, warm environments, certain cheeses, chocolates, things like that, all the good things. And then also otherwise getting pimples, redness, red bumps, pus bumps, also in those areas that may or may not be associated with those same types of spicy foods, certain types of triggers. People can also have ocular rosacea where they get this foreign body gritty red sensation in their eyes. And often that can be accompanied with either forms of rosacea, whether it's the papulopustular form, which is more of the acne-like, or the erythematotelangiectatic, which is more of the redness type of rosacea.
I would like to talk more about ocular rosacea in a second, but kind of going off of your point, there's different types of rosacea and therefore clearly different types of severity of rosacea and different treatments as well. There's clearly no cure, but there's topical drugs, oral antibiotics, even laser therapy, which someone in my family actually experienced before. In your experience, are there certain kinds of treatments that benefit different kinds of rosacea? And could you just speak to the different forms of treatment?
Yeah, I think it really is important to classify what type of rosacea you have. Often, most people have a mixed form where they have redness and they have pus bumps. That's the most common thing that I see. And it ends up being you want to treat it from an anti-inflammatory perspective. So we most often start with topical anti-inflammatory agents or topical antibiotics or antiparasitics, like metronidazole, which is often a cream or a gel that we can use to make the pus bumps go away. It does not help with the redness. That is typically the first line for that type of rosacea. We then can also consider newer types of treatments like topical ivermectin, also known as Soolantra, or topical minocycline, which is called Zilxi. These are newer topical agents and anti-inflammatories that help with the pus bumps and pimple form of rosacea. The redness is often not treated well by these types of topical anti-inflammatories, and redness is often treated with agents that work on reducing the flushing and the blood vessels component of rosacea. And those are medicines like brimonidine or oxymetazoline, which is like Mirvaso and Rofaid. These help reduce redness for short periods of time. But studies are showing that if you use them long enough, it can reduce your redness overall. But the redness in rosacea is most often treated best with either IPL or intense pulse light therapy or pulse dye laser therapy, which typically these two work best for the redness. And again, these help reduce the blood vessels and the redness that we see on the face, but that can come back with continued exposure to triggers and sun exposure. So it's really a multimodal approach to treating rosacea. Often we're doing a combination of things, including topical anti-inflammatories, sunscreen, and laser or light therapy.
And could we return to the topic of ocular rosacea? Because it's something that I know that we've been trying to cover more, but it'd be great to hear just more information about that particular condition.
Yes. So ocular rosacea is also pretty common. It's probably, usually you see it with or without the other forms of rosacea, but people often will complain of a dry eye sensation, a gritty sensation or sandy sensation in their eyes. And it's initially, it can be hard to treat, but often, again, it's reducing the triggers to rosacea. So alcohol, heat, spicy foods, all of the triggers. So reducing those triggers. We also recommend lubricating eye drops. Those are often very helpful too, at reducing that sensation and irritation to the eye. More common things that we use are we either recommend patients take flaxseed oil, or you can now get flaxseed oil infused eye drops. And these help improve the lubrication within our natural tears and also can help reduce inflammation. But when it's very bad, we also often have to give people oral antibiotics such as minocycline or doxycycline, which systemically reduces inflammation inside the eye. We're also using laser and light therapy on the eyelids, which actually does translate and reduces the inflammation in the eye as well. That's not something I do as often because often avoiding triggers, using the appropriate eye drops and anti-inflammatory agents for short periods of time are super helpful.
Now, we met initially through SPD, your association with SPD. So that got me thinking about pediatric rosacea, which we hope to cover next week as well. And I know, like you said, there are certain dietary restrictions or limitations that adults with rosacea can participate in to help with their condition. But what are some of the differences that are observed with pediatric rosacea? And what information do we have on that currently?
Pediatric rosacea is very rare. Much more rare than rosacea in adults. It can be either the flushing type of rosacea or the pimples or pus bumps. And often those types of rosacea, we do think that they obviously would be triggered by those things, but often a lot of kids are not exposed to those types of triggers other than the environmental stuff, because how many kids are really drinking alcohol, or stuff like that. So we don't really know why rosacea occurs in pediatric patients. So there's a theory that there's a type of rosacea can be triggered by a mite called the Demodex mite, or Demodex. It's a cute little mite. There are certain people, pediatric patients, especially those that have had leukemia and have undergone bone marrow transplant. These patients who've had leukemia or are on treatment for leukemia actually grow this type of mite and get this type of rosacea where they get these type of pus bumps and stuff. And so we know that in kids who are undergoing treatment for that, that type of Demodex folliculitis, some may call it rosacea, is triggered by immunosuppression or having a low immune response to therapy that they're getting to treat their leukemia. And so we often treat that with oral ivermectin to kill those mites. But we don't really have that much data on other types of pediatric rosacea.
Well, speaking of data, we were just talking about this before, we both just came back from AAD. There were a few different sessions regarding rosacea. And this month is Rosacea Awareness Month. So I was wondering, as a parting thought, is there anything that you would like our audience to know or something that you think that they should be focusing on with this particular condition, any new data that might be available?
I think now we're learning more about the, the topical, vasoconstrictive agents that we're learning actually do reduce redness, especially when you use them with laser therapy. So we're learning that if we're using laser or light therapy to reduce the flushing and redness that is associated with rosacea, using combination therapy with topical vasoconstrictors like oxymetazoline can result in a more prolonged reduction in redness. So I think it's important to know that there are new options for redness, which is probably the hardest, you know, the hardest part of rosacea to treat. And so I think we're going to learn more about that, and we're getting new data on that. So I'd like to see what's to come. In terms of anti-inflammatories, you know, there's not that much. I think we have newer agents like topical minocycline foam, which works very well. I have used it in patients. It's called Zilxi. I don't think a lot of people know about how effective it is or have used it, but it's a relatively new agent, and I think it works very well. So I'd like for people and patients to know that there are new things on the horizon, and to just give things a try and see what we can do to make patients better.
We'd like to thank Dr. Law for being part of the program, and thank you for listening. If you want more news on rosacea, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. We'll be back this Thursday with a new episode of Doc Talk. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.